WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
The First Amendment gives you the right to the freedom of speech and the freedom to protest. But those rights are being called into question this week, especially on college campuses. On Monday, Northwestern was one of 60 colleges and universities to be warned. Rein in pro-Palestinian protests or suffer the consequences. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. The Department of Education Secretary and President Trump are equating the protests with anti-Semitism, although they failed to say exactly how. A letter from the DOE sent to universities this week says they're being investigated over these claims. Take Columbia University in New York, for example. On Friday, the Trump administration canceled $400 million in federal funding for the school due to what the administration characterized as anti-Semitism on campus. It pointed to pro-Palestinian and anti-war protests that took place last year. We were joined by WBEZ higher education reporter Lisa Curion-Phillip to learn more. And she began with just what was in that letter to Northwestern.
So basically it said the university could potentially face enforcement if they do not do more to protect Jewish students. And it's the letter is unclear about what exactly that means, but I think a lot of people are interpreting that to mean as what you just referred to is that the universities need to take a harder, more hardline stance to cracking down on pro-Palestinian speech on campus.
Mm-hmm. So tell me more about the other colleges and universities that are on the list and why Northwestern specifically made the cut there.
Yeah, so there are colleges and universities around the country from like Boston University to state universities in California. And I think the most likely reason Northwestern made the list is that the president made an agreement with pro-Palestinian protesters last spring in order to resolve the encampment there. And President Michael Schill at Northwestern got a lot of flack for that from pro-Israeli groups who said basically he was caving to these protesters who they alleged were anti-Semitic. In some of their actions. Of course, you know, Jewish students were a huge part of the encampment at Northwestern. So, but you know, in general, Northwestern has definitely been under the microscope in terms of conservatives and pro-Israeli groups and now the Trump administration.
Yeah, I mean, we'll remember Michael Schill, president of the school, had to testify before the House committee last May.
Yeah, that's right. He was grilled by conservative members of Congress, who in general tend to be highly critical of universities, but it was almost like they were trying to make an example of him because Northwestern was one of the few, like, very high-profile universities, I would say, to make an agreement with protesters. And they really took him to task for making that agreement and grilled him about, you know, what disciplinary actions have you taken against protesters? What are you doing to punish faculty that were involved? So really, really, you know, kind of putting the hammer down on him.
Mm-hmm. And so part of the recourse there was students at Northwestern had to take an anti-Semitic video training. What was that about?
Yes. So that was actually rolled out in February, and there, you know, there's been other kinds of reactions, I would say, from Northwestern leaders to this kind of opposition to how they are, I would say, this more open approach to protesters. So, you know, they've rolled out a lot of restrictions in terms of where and when people can protest, and they have started disciplining students under those rules. But then I would say the most recent kind of step they've taken is to roll out this alleged anti-Semitism training. And a lot of students are furious about this training because basically it makes the claim that a vast majority of American Jews are Zionist and that Jewish students, and so Jewish students on campus who are critical of Israel's treatment of Palestinians feel like their identities are being erased and feel like this doesn't leave space for open discourse about Israel and Palestine and Gaza.
Well, this is all happening, as we know, the Trump administration is doing everything in its power to dismantle the Department of Education. What are the local efforts here? You just recently co-bylined a story with our Nader Issa from the Sun-Times, just kind of talking about the impacts felt here in Illinois. Sum them up for us.
Yeah, so, you know, I think Trump is claiming that, and his officials are claiming that they want to return control of education to states. But that's really kind of already the case. Like, you know, things like what is taught, those are made on the local level. And I think educators here say that really the students who are most harmed by this gutting of the Department of Education are the students who are the most vulnerable, low-income students, students of color, students with disabilities who benefit from both from federal funding and then as well as accountability measures that are making sure these students are being served by public schools and universities.
Yeah.
In the college space, a lot of, you know, things like the Pell Grant and student loans that help kids pay for college and go there, those programs are being continued. But I think the worry is, like, who is going to be at the Department of Education to process
exactly.
my FAFSA application and get this money to me? So I'm hearing from educators that students are really asking themselves, like, should I even go to college? Is this going to be something that I can do and or continue doing?
Yeah. That's Lisa Curion-Phillip, WBEZ Higher Education Reporter. Thanks for checking in.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to turn now to an expert in First Amendment rights. Ed Yonka is the Director of Public Policy at the ACLU of Illinois. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Sasha. It's good to be here.
Yeah. So your reaction then to, of course, you've seen this letter that was sent to Northwestern and the other universities. Your thoughts?
I think this is a further effort to squelch free expression on public universities or private universities all across the country. What's clear here is that Donald Trump and his administration do not like people who speak in a way that they don't like or who speak in about policy in a way that they disagree with. So despite the protestations from the administration that they are all about restoring free speech, what they're actually doing is using the power and the lever of government to try to squelch speech on public universities. And a university has always been recognized as a place where people got to explore different ideas.
Open debate. Yeah.
Protest. You know, I remember, I'm an old man now, but I remember in my days on campus when the question was about nuclear weapons in Europe, people on both sides of the debate would gather on campus and talk to one another.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what we saw for the most part with regards to the encampments. There were places where students felt threatened. Those things should be addressed. But the reality is that this was an airing of ideas, which is supposed to be fundamentally what our educational system is about.
Well, I want to get your take on what happened last week. We saw Mahmoud Khalil, who's a Palestinian activist who sort of helped lead Columbia's student protest movement. He was arrested by federal immigration officers who say that they were acting on the part of the State Department to revoke his green card. He's a legal permanent resident of this country and was detained.
He was detained because of his speech. He is not accused of having committed a crime. He is not accused of having associated or been involved with any criminal activity. He was detained and they are threatening to deport him because of his speech. Think about these two things that we've been talking about together, Sasha. Universities are being told, crack down or you'll lose funding, mm-hmm. which will affect everybody. And individuals are being told, if you engage in speech, you'll be punished.
You can't say anything.
And you can't say anything. And I think about what this means at a time when the Trump administration is cutting back on funding on education, on Medicaid, when they're attacking trans folks, when they're engaged in immigration enforcement in a cruel and vicious way. These are things that, quite candidly, would be fodder for protests on college campuses.
Mm-hmm.
And this is exactly the moment that they're trying to push back and keep those protests from happening.
The fact that he's a legal permanent resident, that's the part that's one of the parts that's not sitting well with a lot of folks, because the thought is then, well, if this can happen to him, who's next?
And that's the question I fear that the White House wants you to ask, is if it, because remember last week the president tweeted or socialed or truthed or whatever it is that he does, that lawful permanent residents and people on student visas who engaged in protests would be deported, and people who were citizens would be arrested and or expelled. This is, again, back to the point that your reporter made about turning education back to the states.
Mm-hmm.
What this really reflects is an attempt at authoritarianism from the White House, that the president will decide which protests are legal and which are illegal, which are good and which are bad, and who gets punished and who doesn't.
How is this constitutional, and how concerned are you at this point?
So very concerned. It is not constitutional. It is one of the reasons that the ACLU and our affiliate in New York have joined the legal team for Mr. Khalil. We intend to vigorously defend his rights and to keep him from being deported from this country over speech. This is a horrible precedent to set if it turns out that literally the president, the secretary of state, and people around them can pick and choose whose speech gets to, you know, qualifies them to stay in this country and whose doesn't. And I just remind folks that just within the last couple of weeks, this is a president who now wants to throw out a graduate student who has simply spoken out mm-hmm. in a way that the president doesn't like, as compared to wanting to sell a gold card to Russian oligarchs and very other nefarious actors. This is not about immigration. This is about power and control.
And what's happening with Khalil? The president says this is just the beginning.
Yes, exactly.
This is a starting point.
This is a starting point. And it's why it's so important to challenge us now. It's why the ACLU has joined his legal team.
Yeah. The country's been added to the Civicus Monitor watch list. This happened over the weekend, and this is due to declining civil liberties.
Yeah.
Your thoughts?
We see this every day, and it's two things. It's both the attacks on individuals, you know, again, whether they're migrants and newcomers, asylum seekers, trans folks, people of color through, you know, so-called DEI on DEI measures or things of that nature. But it's also what's happening to the structure of our government. The president is saying he has the power to decide who stays and goes without due process. You know, he's taken away the power of the purse from Congress and turned it over to, you know, a billionaire. I think all of these things are really things that people need to be concerned about, not just for the individual harm it does, but for the collective harm. Because remember, if you remove the checks and balances, any of us can be hurt.
I want to be reminded that this is just one of the fronts that you are facing at the ACLU when it comes to the Trump administration. And you are sort of fighting a lot of fronts when it comes to this administration and what they're doing. How are you preparing for all of this?
In part, we were prepared already.
Okay.
You know, we did a lot of planning and strategizing. We knew, you know, the thing is that in Project 2025, they literally gave us their roadmap for what this would look like. So we were prepared. You know, we were in court literally the afternoon that he signed the birthright citizenship executive order, because we knew that was coming.
Mm-hmm.
The attack on trans folks in healthcare and things like that, those lawsuits were ready to go because we knew exactly what was coming. But I think the other part was we have been thinking for months about the way in which this kind of overall kind of deconstruction of checks and balances, the removal of the guardrails on executive power, were going to play out. We've been ready to strategize, to talk to people, to sort of engage people in that conversation. And so we're ready to go.
Yeah. What else are you keeping an eye on?
You know, I think the other thing, you know, now in addition to speech in that way, is sort of the attack on the legal profession, right? So you get this attack on law firms who helped Jack Smith or who represented Hillary Clinton. But those are really about trying to ensure that those law firms aren't providing pro bono assistance to groups like the ACLU when they sue the Trump administration. Mm. You know, you're having the rollback of student loan forgiveness for lawyers who go to work for organizations that support things that Donald Trump doesn't agree with, like gender affirming care or immigration rights. So, you know, what we're really concerned now is the way in which money from the government is being used to leverage and to try to coerce everyone into following the precepts that the White House sets.
Wow, so much happening.
Yeah, it is.
All at once. Ed Yonka is Director of Public Policy for the ACLU of Illinois. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Meha Ahmed. It was edited by Dan Tucker and mixed by Ari Mejia. To stay in the conversation, make sure to subscribe to never miss an episode wherever you listen or at wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening.
My name is Liz, and as a teacher, I think that WBEZ provides endless sources that I can bring back to my students where they can also engage in a deeper understanding. I teach government, I teach U.S. history, and I have used sources from WBEZ in order to help enrich the understanding of my students.